Parent Entrepreneur Power, conversation number 190.
Parent Entrepreneur Power.
Wait, what?
This is the podcast for parents juggling the tough choices required for success in business while putting family first. Hi, I'm Mary Catherine Johnson, and I share the ups and downs and dirty truths of profits and potty training while chatting with successful parent entrepreneurs from all walks of life. Are you powered up? Hey there, Power Parents. Guess who? You know who I am. Mary Catherine Johnson, of course. And I get to chat with someone I can't even tell you. I'm jumping out of my skin with this conversation because I have been wanting to talk to this gentleman for, 3 years. But to be honest, never got up the courage to ask. And that's because I've seen so few interviews from you. So before I get into that, Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy and Bot Academy, which you've heard me talk a lot about. So, hey, welcome to the conversation.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Well, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. As I say, you know, I was just like, oh man, you were one of the people that I really wanted to talk to, but I didn't see you do very many interviews. So I was kind of like, well, I don't want to just kind of send it out to him and he's not really doing them. But now I know you, so it's kind of like I definitely had the honor to ask. So I'm.
Hey, you were just here at the office a few days ago.
I know. It's so amazing. So, all right, we start the conversation off in the same place with everybody. So I have to ask you this. So, what's your once upon a time story? I mean, how did you get into this whole parenting and entrepreneur gig?
You know, I was an entrepreneur since I was a kid. I always had some business going as far back as I could remember. Even like McDonald's used to have these Happy Meal prizes. I remember getting them and not really caring to play with them, even as a kid, like a 7-year-old. But I would take them into school and sell them for whatever coins my friends got, because we used to have an ice cream salesman come in through the school every day. And so if you had a buck, you could get ice cream for 75 cents and the extra quarter, well, I would sell you whatever was in the Happy Meal. And you remember that, huh? They don't do that, huh?
Dude, no, they don't.
Strange. And then I remember that the guy at McDonald's saw how excited I was about those prizes, that he said, you know what? I can just reach in the back and get you a handful of them, because who doesn't love to watch a kid get excited about something? So he gave me a handful of them, like just actually a ton of them. And I had more inventory than I could sell, but it was heaven for me. I could just keep selling and selling.
Let me ask you that real quick. So did you actually think the ice creams are 75 cents, so everybody's going to have a quarter left over, so I might as well just sell these, or did it just happen that way?
It was more like I want to sell it, and I didn't think any more than that. And it turned out that they had some money because of that ice cream, that their parents wouldn't load them up with 3/4. They would just give them a buck, which is easier. And then they didn't want the quarter back, and so I'd end up with that. That was a thing. And McDonald's did a lot of promotion for me. You know, they would advertise not the Happy Meal to kids. They would advertise whatever that toy was. And so they did all that advertising. Kids would come in wanting it, but their parents were going to take them to get a Happy Meal. So they did it. And so throughout school, I was always running some kind of business or another. I used to sell sandwiches on the weekends and in the summers to local stores. I used to try mail order. I used to do all kinds of stuff. When I graduated from school, my kid brother and I started an email business that became a greeting card company that we ran for 5-8 years, depending on how you count it. We did really well with that, and then I started Mixergy. And I always wanted to not just push off kids, but also push off serious relationships until I'd made it as big as I could. And I knew that I wanted kids, but I wanted to also be in a good place for them.
So did you make it enough to get that serious relationship? I mean, did you have a specific number in mind, or did you just have a feeling in mind? What did you consider?
I didn't have a number. And I think with some people, I'd be embarrassed to say, because they're so number oriented. I just had this sense that it needed to be some kind of a big number. But I also didn't want to be someone who waited till forever and then it didn't come. Mm-hmm. So I then did well enough. And to be honest, I wanted to go out and date a lot first, because I thought I was pushing off not just relationships, but I was pushing off, you know, dating at all. Forget about serious relationships. I was pushing off any relationships until things went well. And so before I wanted to get married, I needed to spend some time dating. And I did that. And then I looked for someone to marry. I was like very organized about it. I said, here's what I'm looking for. And not to the point of being anal about it, but I guess some people would think that. But I wanted to just be aware. I wanted someone who felt like the right person to me. And every relationship I'd go into with that in mind, you kind of associate that stereotypically with women. I was like that. And then once we got in a relationship, I wanted us to have some time together to explore, to travel. And we did. And then I said, all right, we both agreed it's time to have kids. And we thought, great. That's going to happen like within a month. And it didn't. It took us, I don't know how long. At this point, it feels like not that long. But at the time, it felt like, damn, what's wrong? Maybe we made a mistake by waiting. And then we had kids.
Yeah. Isn't that, that's the way it goes for all of us. I mean, well, most of us anyway. I know I did the same thing. Waited a long time and then thought, what the heck's wrong with my body? What's going on? Maybe it doesn't know what it's supposed to do by now. All right. So you were already, quote, successful. You went about this in a pretty organized way to try and find the person that you wanted to spend your life with and then who also was going to be a parent with you. And then now you have kids and you have two kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
How old are they?
The oldest is a little over three. The youngest will turn one in a few weeks.
And both boys?
Yep.
Yes. I love having both boys. Definitely love it. But, you know, I would have loved girls. I would have loved whatever I got. But, yeah. But okay, so three and almost one. So not too close together, but definitely not too far apart. Pretty good ages to be similar.
I think so. I think I would have gone for twins if we could have. If you could have said, Andrew, go with – we had friends over for dinner last night, and they talked about how they'll just drop their two kids in their bedroom at 7:30, and they'll sleep at 8:30. But for that hour in between, they'll talk to each other, and that sounds great. So we don't have that.
Well, you will, though. I mean, once the other one starts – I don't know if you shared rooms, but mine, both of my boys, they shared a room. So they would do that when they got to that age to be able to talk and relate to each other and play with toys together and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's so amazing. It's just so amazing. But okay, so you had a pretty crazy trajectory of business and successful business and Mixergy and talking to people and interviewing them. How you tell me the one thing that you see is different between in business specifically between before kids and now?
Oh, you know what? I'm glad you're asking this because I hide this, but it's painful. There are days when, like 2 days ago, I woke up at 6:10, Olivia woke up at 5:50. I took care of the kids. I mean, she took care of the kids for a little bit, then I took care of them. But for me to take care of them meant dealing with a tantrum or something, getting one in the shower, getting the other one, getting them both dressed, making oatmeal for them both, sitting them down, waiting till Slowpoke finished his oatmeal, but also needing to tell him stories because he wanted it, while the other one, the baby, when he was done, needed to throw the oatmeal on the floor when he was done with it. And then I had to rush out to a phone call that started at 9 o'clock. And you think, all right, 9 o'clock, that's like a 9 to 5. That's not early. But by then I was exhausted from, you know, the things that you have to do in the morning. I wouldn't say exhausted, but it was definitely trying. So I get into that heavy duty call, which was important enough for me to get to exactly on time and be prepared. I needed half an hour preparation for it. Then I go through my day and everything else that goes into it. Then I am at 6:30 at dinner with a friend. And then at 8 o'clock, I think we were done with the dinner. No, actually, dinner started at 7:15, finished at 9:15. And then on many nights, I'll come home, spend some time with Olivia, and then cycle in the backyard for like an hour and a half, you know, using my exercise bike. And then I'm in bed by 11. Before I start my day, I have had more more of a workout than most people will have at all. My hour and a half on the exercise bike riding through this virtual world up a mountain in this virtual world is not nearly as hard as the hour of like cajoling and working and showering them and all that. And nobody has any sense of, I don't want pity for it, but no one has any sense of appreciation of the time that and the work that went in. If I told you before I started my day that I ran a half marathon, you go, wow, I can't believe you're sitting here. If I told you I was with the kids, you'd think, yeah, let's get to work.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part. And I literally ran a half marathon on my own on Sunday, just through the streets of the city. And to me, that was like pleasure. I had some time to myself. That was not nearly as hard as any morning wake up with the kids where you have to get them ready for school.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, before you had kids, people would come to work and work with you, or you'd see them or meetings, and they would have the exact same experience, but probably not say much except, oh yeah, right, the kids were having a problem this morning, or yeah, threw oatmeal or whatever. And you would have no concept.
No, and if anything, I would think that they're complainers, and I would think that's their problem. They brought it on themselves. I really would think they brought it on themselves. Don't complain about that. It's like, don't tell me that you broke your leg because you smashed a hammer into it and expect me to care. Just like, get to work and stop smashing a hammer, right? And really, that is such an unfair way to look at parents, but that's the way that I looked at them.
I did too. We just do, because we have no frame of reference. It's like buying a house and how difficult that is and how time consuming, especially building a house, all the things you have to think about, or remodeling, all the little things, fixtures. I mean, you're just like, I have no concept of that until you actually deal with it. So that's why power parents, you have to be out there going, hallelujah, raising your hand going, yeah, been there. Because that's why we call ourselves power parents.
Yeah.
Because if you can go through that, business is nothing.
It really is not anything compared to that. I will say also, in the reverse is true, that I don't sweat a lot of the work with the kids because there's no disaster in it, really. Like, I don't know a lot of dads who spend as much time with their kids as I spent with my kids in the first, like, we're talking about 3 years. But I'll take them for a full day. I'll take them for a full week. I can handle the whole thing. Give me whatever you got. Because the worst of it is they're going to be upset and cry for an hour and a half, maybe even two. We haven't had a cry that lasted for an hour even, but let's suppose two. In business, if I screw up, I could lose the whole company. I could let people down. I could keep them from getting paid. That sense of impending disaster is always looming. And it's not just me. I've talked to people who have, in every way that you can imagine, made it. And if they're working at a company, still in the back of their heads, they worry about that. Still, they have sleepless nights over it. At this stage, we're talking about the preteens. Mm-hmm. There is no big disaster, right? If I keep them from climbing, if we baby-proof the house, it's okay. And that actually makes parenting a lot easier.
Yeah, it does. And I have to tell you, one of the first 100 episodes of this podcast, we really talked about the similarities between business and parenting. So like, a newborn is just like a startup. It consumes your mind. It consumes your passions, your ideas. You're constantly thinking about it. You're constantly worrying about it. It's like a newborn. And each stage in between, the school year is the same kind of, or the toddler, when you have this huge growth spurt and then you fall backwards a bit because of adjusting systems and blah, blah, blah. And then you get to your exit strategy. It's the same thing in kids. That's where I am. I'm in my exit strategy, right? I have actually one that just turned 19 a couple days ago. And the other one's going to turn 16 next month. So we're really in our exit strategy. Once they drove and got a car, they're done. They're off. They've got freedom. They're doing whatever they want, and they check in. So it's a totally different feeling. And but each of those stages we talked about a lot. But now what I'm trying to do is help people figure out how to coordinate this whole thing, how to not necessarily balance it, because I don't like that word, but make the choices that we need to make. So like, bring me back to that day when you were out till 9:15. Well, obviously you spent time with the kids in the morning, so you got your time with them in the morning, and in the evening they were taken care of. How do you make those choices, and how often would you say, or is it even an often, that that you kind of make more business choices rather than family choices. Does that make sense?
It does. I've been spending mornings and evenings almost always at home and not going out as much. Usually what I will do is if I have a little extra time after work, I'll work and Olivia will do dinner time and then I'll come and do bedtime. But I usually will not go out after work anymore, where before I used to have a standing scotch night at the office every Thursday before I would look for one or two extra things to do with people or have them over. Now, this place that we got just specifically because it's great for having people over, we just don't have people over as much because it's becoming a wreck. And for me, a wreck is not like what it might be for others, but I can't stand that there are scuff marks on my wall. So, you know, those little things bother me a lot. So what I've decided is that I can't really work out in the mornings the way I used to. And I treasured my hour of running every day to the office. I picked this office specifically so I could run to it from my house and have my hour exercise on the way to work. I don't get to do that because I need to jump right into work fast. And so what I'll do is instead of going out at night, I'll do some training in my backyard. I'm looking at my calendar right now and tonight I'll get the kids to sleep. They're going to last longer than I expected. And then I'll have a bike ride in my bedroom. Since Olivia's going out, I don't want to do it in the backyard. I want to be in like close enough proximity that I can hear them.
Yeah. So it sounds like you, because you made this choice to find the person and then have mm-hmm. kids and do all that, that you really, plus you're organized to begin with. Obviously, it sounds like. So you really have a schedule and have made these very specific conscious choices around your life now. Did you expect it to be that way?
I did. I didn't expect to still be in San Francisco because I feel like San Francisco is great for meeting people, for getting together with them. It's fantastic for it. If you're not into that, it's not as wonderful because it's not much of a family town. It's not much of a kickback place. And everything is like super expensive in anticipation of the fact that you're, you know, using it for work and that there are a lot of competing offers for that resource, right? So like, for example, if you go out for a drink somewhere, there's a good chance that some tech company has taken over your place that you're planning to go out for a drink because they have a big event and you're kind of competing with those tech companies even over a drink. So that was not expected. I actually thought, because I did have a ton of energy and I still do, I thought that I'd still be able to go out and see people. What I'm finding is my expectation was I'd run to work still, and I'd still like to get back to that, though I'm kind of bored by my runs here. My expectation is that I'll get back to running. That's what I thought I'd always do, run to work. And first be with the kids, run to work, then at night be with the kids, and then when they're asleep, go out for something, right? I don't want to see people anymore after this day of people. And that's the thing that just took me by surprise. I still have enough energy to cycle in the backyard. It's not as easy as it was before after all that. But I don't have the energy for another conversation, especially when I have to like push to make conversation with people because not everyone is good at conversing, to be honest with you. You know, there are a lot of people I think in San Francisco who are just not especially open and easy to talk to as you'd expect.
So how long did you live in San Francisco before you had kids?
About a year and a half.
Oh, okay. So not a huge amount of time. Did you find that same situation in that year and a half?
I did, but
years?
I could put up with it and I could draw them out. I mean, the example that I often give is I'd invite people over to my house for dinner. They would come in, they would forget to shut the door. They're not thinking like that. Like shutting the door is a normal human thing. Here's another example. I'd have people over for drinks or for poker. Olivia would walk in and just say hi to them. They wouldn't say hi to her. It's just like, and these are guys who would do that. It's a weird thing. And I actually am the kind of person who would bring it up to them and they'd express some insecurity around it, that it wasn't an intentional snub. They just couldn't. There was one person specifically who was fairly well known in tech who said, I just couldn't bring myself to like even greet your wife because I'm so shy. And I thought, that's interesting. I knew that was there, but it's interesting to have him just volunteer that and to have him recognize that about himself. So that's some of the things that I noticed around here.
So what I hear you saying is, since you now have a family and you now have kids and a lot of that energy, not just intellectual energy, but a lot of emotional energy and commitment to another human being like your kids is more important to you, or taking more of your sense of that energy, and you just don't have it a lot left over to do with those other people.
Yep.
Is that okay?
Yep.
And that, so it sounds like, that's changed something pretty fundamental in what you were used to be doing.
Yeah. That's a challenge.
So what's the biggest thing in business, do you think, that has changed, or your outlook on business? Is there anything that you can think of that's the biggest thing that changed with your outlook on business since you had kids?
I used to wake up in the middle of the night, no matter how much money I had in the bank, I still would wake up thinking I could be homeless soon at any point. I would like have this strange visualizations of myself with nothing. And I think that comes from being an entrepreneur where you're always putting it online. And so that changed, where now when I wake up in the middle of the night, I think not I'm going to be homeless, but I'm going to let these kids down. I'm going to let them down, not to the point of all of us being homeless necessarily, but to a point where they can't have what they need, where they'd be embarrassed because they might come home with their friends and suddenly the electricity is out because I didn't pay the electric bill. I'm not at a point where that's even remotely possible anywhere except in my mind. And in my mind, that is it. The other thing that happens is I keep thinking, am I being like fully truthful and not putting on airs in public so that they could look back and be proud, as opposed to say, I know he's a liar. I know that he's a fraud and I can't take him seriously because of that. And it's very easy in conversations. I notice people do it. I notice myself even do it, frankly, right? Get in conversation with someone and you want to just kind of beef up your own self-importance. And that's fine. It's a human thing to do. I'd rather not do it, but it's fine if you do it from time to time. But if you start doing it, if I start doing it publicly, I feel like then my kids can't respect me. They can't, like, do they then continue this lie on Facebook or on their Snapchat accounts, or do they just get embarrassed by it? That's a second thing that's come up, and I keep trying to be fully myself so that there isn't this set of fake phoniness that they have to live up to or deal with.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. And through this whole time with my kids and the ages they are now, I was told once by a psychologist, PhD in psychology, we took our youngest in for some issues we were having, and he specifically looked at me and said, I apologized to my son for something, and he was like 7 years old or something. And the psychologist looked at me and said, oh my goodness, don't ever apologize. That will come back to you when they're teenagers and they will jump all over it. They'll sense sickness. I'm like, dude, what is your problem? Are you kidding? I'm not going to apologize to my kid. You know, I mean, so from my point in bringing that up is we change, you know, and we never know what's coming. And we look at the where we are right now and say, oh, you know, I probably shouldn't have posted that. I probably should have been more real. I probably should have been whatever, and learn from it and change with it. And I've had some really interesting conversations with my sons around those kinds of things, saying, you know, gosh, this is what I did. And, you know, I'm sure that didn't make you feel good. And either they were like, I have no clue what you're talking about. It didn't even affect me at all. Or they were like, yeah, you know, I didn't really like it. And we go on and we change and we grow. It's just life. But wow. So, and I got to tell you, you are one of the most generous people I've ever been around. I mean, thanks. You are so generous. You know, going out to eat or something, you're always going to want to pick up the tab, or getting drinks or something like that. So how do you...
That drives Olivia crazy,
those?
By the way.
I can imagine.
It does.
I can imagine. I know my husband does the same thing and it drives me crazy too. But how do you balance that? How do you balance that fear, let's say, that you wake up in the middle of the night with, and how you actually are?
For some reason, it's two different things for me. It's not real what's happening in my mind in the middle of the night. It's a fear, and I recognize it as a fear. I do think that, I try to rationalize it in my head. I try to, like, in the middle of the night, be reasonable and say, dude, you're not going to go bankrupt. You're not going to, like, ruin it for your kids. And if you are, you always stood for that. You always said you wanted to marry someone who'd be happy to sleep in a cardboard box if that's what it came down to, because you want to take risks in your life. And so if you are, then this is a way of communicating to your kids what you stand for. But in the middle of the night, there's no speaking to me. There's no rationality. So yeah. I'll tell you what I do instead. And then during the day, I can deal with this. What I do is I try to remember that thought in the middle of the day too, so that I can realize this is there and not shut it out. This is a fear I need to be aware of. And the other thing I do is in the middle of the night, instead of arguing with it and getting distracted by it, I find that I can't say to my mind, just shut off completely. I need to give it something to focus on. And so what I do is I like take my mind through a story, through I imagine that I built this rocket ship in my backyard, and then I get into the rocket ship, and then I imagine, well, what would happen if I had this rocket ship? Where would I go? Well, I would fly it up into the moon, but the kind of going to the moon has been done. Maybe what I would do is just swerve around. What happens if I swerve around and then I end up in this black hole? So I go through this black hole. Where do I come out? Right. And I just go through that imaginary story and imagine how I would feel through all of it. And that gives me something to get lost in. It's hard to say to your mind, shut off, be blank. It's much easier to say, get carried away with this other thing. And that's one of the tips, by the way, that I learned as a parent from Olivia's cousin, Gregory. Before we had our kid, he said, you can't say no all the time. What you'd rather do is say, have this instead. And I asked him what he meant by it. And what he taught me was, even if our baby wants to go and grab a stepladder that he's not supposed to even be around, clawing it out of his hands is rough and it could lead to crying. But if I give him two pieces of Lego that are stuck together and hand it over to him instead, he might get distracted by that and I could take the dangerous stepladder out of his way. So I do the same thing with my mind. If my mind wants to just latch on to these fears that will keep me from falling asleep and keep me up at night worried about stuff that's not real, I can't say don't do it. I guess I can, but it doesn't work as well as saying, hey, how about this instead? Get lost in this story. And so that's where my mind goes.
Amen. Oh my goodness. Yes. Power parents. I hope that will help you in the future, because we all have those same fears, and definitely it's so true. I do the exact same thing. But
with your mind, huh?
Yes. Well, I have to, same thing. Otherwise I'm up and I find myself being drawn back into the fear. And so then I have to start the story over or go back to wherever the story was, and have to go try and follow it, because I just keep swerving back in there.
You used to have bad insomnia. Do you ever have insomnia?
Yeah, occasionally, only when something really major is on my mind. And my fear is not necessarily business related. It really is losing my family, losing my kids, something. When they were young, it would be, oh my God, somebody's going to take them. And I would have dreams of how I would be like, ninja mama, man, anybody come in my house. I would specifically make myself go through that scenario of, if I found somebody in my house trying to get my kid, they're dead. So yeah,
I get that. That's suddenly starting to like resonate with me. There's a possibility that something could happen. You know, I find that Gary Vaynerchuk is a little, he's not the kind of person I want to be. And so I can't keep listening to him. He'll do things like work endlessly and prove to you how endlessly he works. And the entrepreneurs and the business people I admire are not working constantly. They're creating structures for their business to work without them. And they're proud of the systems that they create. And I mean, even at the highest levels, they're not them doing all the work. Like when Gary Vaynerchuk broadcasts a video of himself at midnight, out for dinner with people, and then again in the morning at basketball with other people, that's not a lifestyle that I associate with the best entrepreneurs that I admire. But there is something that he said that sticks with me. It's like like you want to reach this top 1% of achievers in life, you have to work for it. And there are times when at the end of the day, I don't want to get on the bike and work out, or I don't want to get up early the next day and read something in preparation for a set of meetings. And that sticks with me, that when I'm really tired, I remember I want to be at this 1% of life. I have to do this work. This is the work that gets there. And it's not painful work. It's just, this is what you need to do to get to that. Kind of like when I'm in a marathon and I'm really tired at mile 21, this pain is what you have to suffer to get to 26.2 and finish that marathon. And so I think about that a lot, and I try to do that a lot. And for me, things like that would be an issue are, well, yesterday I had a series of calls that I needed to prep for. Well, I don't want to. At the end of like the day before I was out with Neville, we talked work. I woke up early and I still had to, and I did it, and I forced my mind to stay focused on it.
Yeah, because the energy that you have is really, you have an amazing amount of energy. And so to be able to focus your mind is pretty amazing. But okay, so with that, and I agree with you about that, everything you just said about Gary Vaynerchuk and focus and working really hard. So what are some of the things that you've either let go or specifically delegated because you have kids and can't do it all like you were able to do before you had kids?
It's a lot. The big thing that it forced me to do is to, with Mixergy, we were pretty unstructured. The interviews would happen and everything would just be on me, and I wouldn't even notice it. Little things were on me, like, how do I find a guest? How do I pre-interview the guest? How do we put the post up? Well, I could do it, so I'll do it. I could do that and I'll do it. Really, just a lot of work because you can do it and because it made me feel good for doing all the work. Then I was about to have my first kid, and I said, I don't know what this is going to be like. My whole world's about to change. I should be prepared. And I forced everyone at the company to systemize. I forced myself to ask for help from other entrepreneurs. How do you do this? How do you do that? And I just forced it, and the systems helped. It helped tremendously.
Is that so you haven't really had to give anything up then, it sounds like. You've just basically systemized.
With the first one, I didn't. With the second one, I let things fall apart a little bit, and then I took on more work, and that was an issue. The other thing that was an issue was Olivia's work was 7:30 to 7:30 or 7:30 to 7, right? And with the first kid, we had a full-time nanny. It's fairly easy. She's there at 8 o'clock. She leaves at 6 o'clock. I get to take the kid early if I want to and go out, and life was fairly easy. When we had the second child, we sent the first child, the oldest, to preschool. And that preschool had limited hours, and the preschool was about a half hour away. So now I really had to leave work early and get there late because of that, and, you know, tend to the baby at home. And Olivia was still working those long hours. And we took on Bot Academy at Mixergy, you know, like this new thing. And so all that together, and we had three people who had babies at the same time in the company. And so suddenly there were three people who weren't there. And I have this new thing in my life. And I kind of let go of some of our discipline internally. And so that was a big pain. Thankfully, that didn't last too long for a couple of reasons. For one thing, Olivia's company allowed her to work from San Francisco more often. That made life easier. So she didn't have to commute down to South Bay, which is about an hour away, or an hour and a half. And the second thing is we finally, after the chaos of it all, we did a company retreat. I went on Airbnb and I rented the nicest place we could get. Nice, like, private beach, private pool, a lot of space. And I just said to everyone, we need to organize things, and we needed to create a set of systems. I said, here's what goes into a good system. We need a metric to tell us that we're on track. We need software to keep up with it, because I don't want us to have to keep the systems in our head. So the systems have to be documented, and some software has to lead us through it so that we're not human. We don't have to keep trying to figure our way through it all. And a couple of other things, like software to keep track of it, some way to make sure we're actually using it and to keep it from growing stale. A lot of little things. I said, here's what goes into a good system. Now let's take the biggest things that we do over and over again and try to systemize it. And then we created systems and we created an owner for each system. And then we were using that to organize our company. I used to think that systems were the greatest. And I remember even when I hired my mom to work for me at my first company, and we'd get checks. And I'd say, we had like 3 checks. How many checks do you even get as a business? I said, you know what? I still want to create a system for this because it's not going to take me that long to create a system and it could pay off in the future. So she would say, I could just sign the checks and take them to the bank. I could write out the account number. I'd say, no, we're getting a printer. I want you to print out that data on the back of the check. And she'd say, but it's only 3. I'd say, you know what? One day it could be 300. We're going to have a process for this. And since she's my mom, she said, okay. And you know what? I have photos somewhere. We ended up literally getting hundreds of checks a week. People would write checks and mail it in, right? Still to this day, people write checks. I have checks right here on my desk. At some point, I've got to go and deposit it in the bank. It drives me nuts. And I was just like a real systems person. Then it paid off. And still in the back of my head, I thought lame people create systems. Only lame people have it. It's like you're forcing yourself to repeat yesterday by having a system that was the same as yesterday. And I said, that's not where creativity comes from. And so I let them all go. And I was wrong. Turns out if you study the most creative people, they often have systems for their creativity. And one of my favorites was when I was backpacking through Europe, I read Hemingway and he had like a process for how he was going to do it. He would, for example, and this stuck with me, not end the night by ending his writing, but end it with a little more in the gas. Like he knew what he needed to keep writing, but he decided to stop before he did it. So the next day he'd continue where he left off and have that momentum to feed off of, right? Then there is the great book on writing by Stephen King, where he has a set number of, I think it's pages that he wants to write or something. There are a handful of like on writing books that I read. Ayn Rand has an on writing book, great read also. Anyway, they have processes. Same thing here. And I've been forcing myself to get back into processes and systems. And then I have to also cajole everyone else to get into getting into it. Because like my mom, they all say, well, I could just write it on the back of a check. But if you don't have a process, it's not going to work long term. So that's one of the big things. I have to have a process. I have to have some system for everything.
Yeah. And I think of music, because music is my big creativity. You have to practice. And practicing has to be a certain system. You do your scales first, you know, and you warm yourself up and then you get into your piece. And it's no one that I know of just starts off practicing by just starting to play something. You have to have some kind of a system of warming up your creative muscle. And yeah, I agree 100%. So have you transferred any of those systems over to your family?
Not overtly. Like I thought we'd just start creating checklists too, which we didn't. But I'll give you an example of how we do systems. When Shep went to this new school, every morning they train them, you have to do your steps. Go to the bathroom, change your shoes, put your lunch bag away, and one other thing that I can't remember. Because they wanted everyone to start off like the right way. And I thought, well, look at this. They get him to go do all this stuff. And they've only known him for a week. I've known him for 2-3 years now, and he doesn't do it for me. So I copied it. I said, Shep, we're going to do our steps here and our steps before going to sleep. And we have a list of things, including brushing your teeth. Now brushing your teeth is not an issue, yeah. Right? And so I've known entrepreneurs who will have checklists up on their kids' walls for getting ready in the morning. And I believe that that works. We don't have that exactly like that, but we do have our processes that are not on the wall, but they are there. And it helps. It helps create a sense of like understanding of how the world works for the kids. It makes our lives easier.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And it's the same thing with it. Sleep time is, I think, one of the most important times to have something like that, because you think our brains are going crazy. I mean, their brains are absorbing how many new things every single day. So how could they not? Obviously, they have to shut down in order to just grow the way they do. But to have that sense of of procedure to prepare for something, especially bedtime, is for my kids, it was very important, you know, to have the bath, to do the teeth, to read the story. And, you know, we talk about that even now. We have memories whenever I go into their rooms of the dog or the cats laying on their bed, listening to the stories with us. But yeah, we don't tell stories anymore.
We do them all the time.
I know. They're so fun. So, all right. So what's the absolute craziest thing that has happened to you so far as a parent?
I guess the diaper explosions. I'm not sure how I should express it here. Those are the craziest, right? Getting peed on where like that's one of the craziest. I'm trying to think of another. Oh, I know where this happened once, where Olivia and I were walking with one of the kids when they were baby through a boardwalk in somewhere in South Bay. And suddenly the kid pooped in his pants, like through the diaper, and it came out, and we had nothing with us. Cause I refused to get weighed down. I refused to allow these kids to weigh me down. I want to be free and go do whatever I want. And so I've got to tell you, no issue at all. I took the pants off. I went into the sink in the bathroom. I washed it. I used soap. And then I went to the hand dryer. I dried it off. We were right back in business and we continued. And I see these parents and I understand them. I'm not putting them down, but it's not me. They carry around a backpack full of stuff, full of food that's exactly their lunch, full of the apron or the bib or whatever it is that they need. I refuse to do that. The only thing that I will do is when they were kids, I would take diapers with me sometimes. And I've got to tell you, I live in a city. I've always lived in major cities. There is a store where I can go and buy a diaper anywhere, right? So if we're at a stage where I need a couple of diapers, I'll shove one diaper in my back pocket with a couple of wet wipes in a plastic bag, and that's it. And we can go anywhere. I'll do it right on the street if I need to, on the sidewalk, I mean, if I need to, and change our diaper, and we're right back on to enjoying life and living it. If that's an issue and we go through that one, I need another one, I'm going to find a Walgreens somewhere, or I'm going to be creative enough to solve it somehow. We were on a long flight and we didn't have a baby bottle for the baby. At one point that was really painful, but I found a way. There was someone on the flight who had an extra bottle. I borrowed their bottle and we made do. I want to go as light and be as in the moment as possible. And so whatever crazy stuff they could throw at me, I think I could handle. Again, this isn't me going out of business because of it. Bring it on, kids. Yeah. Bring it. Now, at this point, yes. Bring it on after 10 could be different. Yeah. Bring it on at this point is what? You poop on something?
Yeah, whoopee-doo.
I can deal with it. I'll figure it out.
Yeah, right.
I'll be one of those guys in the bathroom who take their shirts off and wash it in the sink. Totally
yeah.
Fine.
No
Bring
problem.
It.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, when you're 10, we could definitely chat. We'll chat about middle school sometime, I'm sure. That's the one you don't want them to bring it on.
Yeah, no, I don't want that.
No. Yeah, the sex ed in the classroom is a very interesting one. But anyway. So,
yeah, no question. It might even be after 5 that it's an issue. At this point, whatever they do to me,
yeah,
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Bring it.
So is that the same attitude you have in business? I mean, are you the same, just go and...
Not to the same degree. It's interesting. This is probably the one sentence that's going to stick with me for weeks after this conversation. Why am I not bringing that to every part of my business? And I should. I should just say, whatever you got, bring it. Yeah.
Why do you think you don't?
I don't see a 5-year-old causing any damage in my life at all. What could they possibly do, right? I do see stuff at work causing potential damage. And that's an issue. And then the damage could also impact my kids. And so that's something I'm going to actually spend a lot of time thinking about. Like, what's the real damage that could be caused? Maybe I should just let it go. Do whatever you want. Bring whatever you got. There's this TV show called Suits that is on USA Network. And the first couple of seasons of it, which I watched on Amazon, every time something would happen, a lawsuit, their firm would go under, these lawyers would always stand up and say, whatever you got, I could handle it so much more. And I always admired that about them. And I do bring that into a large part of my life. But now you're making me realize, why am I not also bringing that to work?
Yeah.
So bring it.
Well, yeah. And it's a
bring
scary.
It, Mary, whatever you got.
Yeah, it's a scary thing sometimes. But yeah, it's the same. What could happen? You lose your house, you lose your car, you know, really, as long as nobody dies, whatever, truly.
Yeah.
Stuff's on the walls. I mean, my car, I was actually driving to pick up my son from school, from high school last year, and a deer came out of nowhere and ran into the side of my car. I didn't hit the deer hit me. And there's a dent in my car. And of course, that's something that bugs my husband. It doesn't bug me. It's a car. Whoopie-doo. There's a little dent in it. It doesn't bother me in the least. But yeah, I don't want a deer to hit me if he can help it. He was fine, though. That was totally fine. So yeah, bring it. That'll be, I think, a new motto. I think we can handle it.
By the way, speaking of scratches on a car, we finally, after having kids, got a car, which I was against. I was a New Yorker. As soon as I moved to Manhattan, out of my, like, whatever Queens place, I was glad to give up the car and just start taking cabs. Then I was glad about Uber. And every city we were in had some infrastructure to take me from point A to point B without owning a car. We finally got one for the kids. And we have this narrow garage that we have to specially, like, not just go forward and backward in. We have to also turn to make room for bikes and other stuff to get out of. And people who borrowed our car, who used it, scratched it. And as soon as the first scratch came on the car, I kind of wrote it off mentally. Just like, that's it. It's not my car anymore. I don't care. And then we started adding more and more scratches. And that does bug me. As much as I don't care about cars and I don't want to have it, it does kind of bug me that I'm now accepting this set of scratches in my life. Not enough that I care about cars and bring another one in, because frankly, it will get scratched up again. This is a narrow environment, but still.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just the way he just wants it. He's like, it's broken. You fix it. What are you leaving it broken for? Kind of idea. So, but that's fine. We'll deal with it. So, all right, Andrew, there are people sitting out there listening to us, and you've talked about the great success and the way you've systematized and structured your life and, you know, some of the things you've given up, some of the things you've brought in. They're sitting out there and they're sitting on the fence and they're rocking back and forth going, yeah, what if I wake up in the middle of the night thinking about these things? What if I have to meet payroll? What if all those things that are probably in the back of their mind going, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. What would you say to that person who's rocking back and forth, wondering whether they're
going to know if they should be an entrepreneur because of this?
Yes.
First of all, if they don't know they want to be an entrepreneur, they should just realize, I will ride my bike in the middle of the night in the backyard for a couple of hours. I think we're at a point in life where you could still do this stuff for a couple of hours in wherever. It doesn't have to be the backyard. It could be on your kitchen table when everyone's asleep. If that's what you want, you got to do it. You got to do it. I'd also say the other thing is that we have this creative need to be that entrepreneurship satisfies, and you can't help but do it. You can't help but do it. It's like the people who wanted to play music in school. If you told them not to play music, they'd find a way to, I don't know, drum with their rulers. You have to. This is what you meant to do. It's kind of like kids, frankly. Every rational thing in my head would say, don't have kids. What's the upside of it, right? We're not living in times where they're going to, like, work our farms. And still, I have to do it. So I just decided I have to do it. I'm not fighting with that sense of myself. There's no period in my life that I said, I'm not going to do it. I just accepted this is the biological imperative. I accept that I have that. I'm not going to rationalize it away. Let's go do it. It's kind of like money. I accept that I have some need for it. I can go through years of trying to train myself not to care about money, or I could accept that this is where I am and just go pursue it. Same thing here. If you're out there thinking about starting a business, I'm surprised, first of all, that you didn't. We're in an environment where anyone could. And second, just recognize if you have the biological imperative, you have to just give into it and find those couple hours.
And power parents, you've already got the power if you're a parent. So no excuses, man. You can do anything you set your mind to. Definitely. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me. I cannot tell you how honored I am that you took some time out of your day and shared this with us. And I know there are many people in the audience that got a lot out of what you said and will be able to apply it. And I think more along the lines of just being okay. Just, you know, it's okay. Let it go. It's fine. And to get out and just be, I'm so honored. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks. Yeah. If anyone out there got anything useful out of this, whenever I talk about anything personal, I wonder, does anyone even care? So if you guys out there do care, my email address is andrew@mixergy.com. Or frankly, if you don't care, I'd love to hear that too. I never think that you're a jerk for doing that. So for, in that case, it's also andrew@mixergy, mixergy.com.
To get powered up for your day, just go to parententrepreneurpower.com and listen to any one of the over 100 episodes we've had so far with amazing entrepreneurs just like you. It might just help you feel like a grown-up again.